Good morning. Hello and welcome to Rogue Cell Radio, a community radio show hosted by two combat veterans. This show focuses on veterans, our North Coast community, our history, and our community's history. I'm your host, Sean Davis. I left the U.S. Army Infantry after 12 years as a platoon sergeant. While I was in the Army, I was deployed to Revolution in Haiti, a war in Iraq, where I received a Purple Heart, and then our country's largest natural disaster in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina.
And I'm Sean Johnson, co-host, born and raised here in Astoria, Oregon, with deployments to Iraq twice and Afghanistan once.
And happy Thursday. This is amazing that we get to do this live. So we do this on the fourth Thursday of every month during 9 a.m. Hopefully the guys at Vet Coffee are listening to us. This morning in the studio, we have Silver Star recipient Matt Zedwick.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good.
So we asked Matt here because Matt and I have known each other for 21 years now.
Yeah, quite a while.
And so we both here live in Astoria. So let's talk about we're talking to a man who has an action figure named after him. Did you know that, Sean?
I had heard rumors that there was an action figure.
Oh man, I almost brought him this morning too.
He was also a character in a video game.
The Army made a video game, America's Army.
America's Army. And you had to do all the voice for that and everything?
I didn't do the voice, no. America's Army, it was an online video game. It was played all around the world. It was like in the top 10 games for like a decade for like online play. I was like the instructor at the shoot house, you know, giving like the weapons description and before they go and clear their weapons. And,
that's funny.
And then I was also, they had me in the Xbox 360 game, also I think called Real Hero.
Real Hero.
Real Heroes.
And I knew him way before that.
And then you went on to Deal or No Deal.
That's right. Sean was there.
He was there on Deal or No Deal. Yeah, I got to see Howie Mandel and all that stuff. So how did it all begin? Where were you born?
I was born in Portland, Oregon.
Portland, and then, so what made you join the Bravo Company 2162 out of Corvallis?
Oh, let's see. I was actually going to join the Navy first,
but
then I met this guy in my math class, and who was a real clown, and I enjoyed his jokes. And we both got C's together in that class. It was Ron Clement.
Ron went on to become the battalion commander of Bravo of 2162.
Yeah, and he recruited me into the Oregon National Guard instead of going Navy. And helping me get a C in my math class.
Oh, that is outstanding. So you joined, I remember the first day I came to Bravo Company, I had re-enlisted the day after 9/11, and so it was October, and we were doing a land nav drill. And then I was in my civilian clothes still. They didn't even have a uniform for me, but they're like, all right, you're a sergeant, you take these guys, go out. And you were in that squad.
Yep.
And we plotted out all our points. I'm like, all right, let's fill up for water. And we filled up for water, that we get our pace count and our azimuth, and we got to the first point. And then I'm like, all right, well, who's got the compass? And we had left the compass at the water buffalo.
Oh, yeah. Dude, how far away were we from that? We were like, at least 400 meters plus the water buffalo. We weren't going back.
I'm not going back to the water. I'm not going to show everybody that we forgot this thing. So it was so funny. But
who needs a compass?
I think we were actually already to the next point before we realized we had the compass. But it was a competition. We were going to win. So it was like, well, we got all our points plotted, and we still had the protractor, and we just utilized the terrain. And
we won.
We
were the first ones back, and they gave us a 12-pack of Dead Guy ale.
Whole case of Dead Guy.
That's funny. And then, of course, you know, after a while, I remember we were training. It was a whole our 2-week AT, and we had a big get together. It was at the end of training, and we're all standing there. And then Sergeant Ashford, he was our first squad guy. He's like, I have to go to the bathroom. The colonel's going to talk, but you just tell me what I missed. And that's when the colonel told us we're going to Iraq.
Oh,
and he told everybody we're going to Iraq. And then Sergeant Ashford comes out of the Port-a-John, and he's looking at everybody. He's like, What did I miss?
Oh, man. That was here at Camp Rialia. Yeah. When we were doing that annual training when we got our orders for Iraq.
Yeah, yeah, we were here.
That was a day.
Yeah, yeah. So we went to Iraq together, and it was a big train up first. We did 6 months up in Fort Hood, Texas, because they wanted to make sure that National Guard guys were able to do the same thing or whatever.
Yeah.
We ended up getting fast rope trained and all this high speed stuff, and then they sent us to Iraq and drive it up there from Kuwait, and that was so crazy. What was your experience?
From which point?
From the beginning, in that deployment.
Oh man, you know, I was a little feedback here.
Yeah.
You know, so, I'll be honest, I was actually a little scared.
Yeah. Well, good.
You know?
That just shows you're safe.
I had no idea what to expect. And when we got into Kuwait, I think I was just... I mean, remember we were, like, in the tents, in the bunks, and we could barely move? I was so exhausted from the heat alone.
Oh, yeah. You meant Kuwait. Like, Kuwait was so funny because it looked like somebody was, like, gonna colonize Mars. Because nothing there except for a bunch of tents, and then all you turn and there's a, it wasn't Starbucks, it was, what was it, Green Bean or something?
Green Bean Coffee.
Green Bean Coffee. And then you turn another corner and there's Burger King. And it was so funny, but it's out in the middle of nowhere, camels running around.
Oh, man. We got our introduction to dust storms.
Yeah.
And my first shawarma. That shawarma cart. That's all I can get out of bed to do is go eat food and come back because it's so stinking hot.
There were times when I was in Baghdad during my second tour, our whole mission cycle would just revolve around when the markets were open.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, hey, man, I'll give you some money. Go get me some of that pita bread and give me some of the falafels and, you know.
Well, for us, we had three different jobs to do in Taji. Everybody else, the other companies went to Baghdad. We were specifically sent to Taji for one job, to be the quick reaction force for the Green Zone.
Mm-hmm.
But then they found out that we were getting mortared every morning, so they sent us to go try to find the guys who are mortaring us every morning. And then they're like, oh, there's a main supply route road out there, main supply route, and there's a bridge. Somebody needs to guard that bridge. So we were guarding that bridge. We're looking for the guys mortaring us. We get on helicopters and fly down to the Green Zone whenever something happened. And it was a lot, huh?
Do you remember when we first crossed that bridge? Remember, it was so rickety. It had been, like, blown up or something. They had, like, some type of makeshift bridge the engineers put up.
Yeah.
And it was, like, we were driving on these little metal platforms with the vehicles. That was kind of freaky.
It was pretty scary. Yeah, it was pretty, it was a lot, you know. But, of course, you know, I was only there for 4 months. I didn't get to finish my tour. We were looking for... was it a vehicle-borne IED factory or something like that? I don't remember that mission. You remember that mission that morning?
We were just looking for IEDs.
Yeah, and they...
Makers, I think.
Somebody who's making IEDs, and we were given a... It looked like... It was supposedly like a map, but it looked like a PowerPoint presentation. Look, square here, squiggly lines of river, you know? It's like, what the heck is this? And I remember we parked right in front of the house that we were supposed to look for, looking at our maps and looking around, and we're like, oh, that's the house right there. And so we're like, oh, you know what? Let's just leave for an hour. We'll come back. And I guess during that hour, they planted some explosives. You know?
That's right. Yeah.
It was in that concrete.
I remember those houses. You're right. Yeah, that was in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. And we went to go check out this old concrete factory or something. And I remember, like, these two guys, there's, like, giving a stink eye. I'm like, there's something up with this. And so we stayed back, our truck and our buddy truck, and the other two trucks took off. And then the lieutenant called us to follow. I was like, I just had a bad feeling about this. And then we went. And I remember my last words were, hey, Z, let's skirt this truck. Don't get too close. And then that was it. Truck exploded, and that was what happened. What we're saying this because I wanted to let everybody know why Matt Zedrick got his Silver Star, because when that ambush happened, those guys that I thought were giving us a stink eye, so that they exploded the IED, it completely destroyed our car. it killed our good friend Eric McKinley.
Mm-hmm.
And then those guys started shooting at us with machine guns. And then, I don't remember a whole lot other than waking up with my head in your lap outside of the truck. So you'll have to fill me in on what happened. I know you pulled me out of the burning Humvee.
Oh, man. You know that ride, like at the fairground, when it just like you're sitting in the chair and it just drops, like that free fall thing?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. Like my heart was like literally in my throat when that went down, we got blown up. I just, you know, the first thing I remember is being slammed against the door, like just such a force that just like slammed me against the door. Like everything was just black for my vision. And I just remember like my eyes closed, slammed against the door. And it's like, I couldn't pull myself off while we were like spinning in the air.
Right.
I still remember the sound of like the metal of our vehicle like crinkling.
Wow. I can't remember any of the sound. I just,
oh man,
I don't remember the explosion. All I remember is like, hey Z, don't get too close to that truck, and then boom, that was it. And then when I woke up, I remember the taste in my mouth.
Yeah,
like that real metal, and like all of like my teeth were black. I was spitting
your teeth
black.
Were black.
Yeah.
Your whole face was black.
And so I wake up and I'm in Z's lap, and like the ground, the road around us is popping. And in my head, it didn't make any sense. I was like, it's so hot that the road is popping. But it was those guys shooting at us. they opened up with machine guns. Man. And so I tried to stand up. I was like, we have to get on the other side of the truck. And that's when I figured out my leg was broken. And then you were dragging me. I still had that scar because you grabbed my Y harness and you're dragging me around. I had the worst scar right above my butt.
It's your born again birthmark.
Yeah. So he's dragging me across the road. It was so hot, and just the road. And then we took cover and we're trying to return fire. And I'm only using my left hand. And I'm like, what the heck? And then I looked at my right hand and it was just, bro, I'm surprised I still have it. Because both of these bones were broken and it was just hanging there, you know? That was pretty crazy. And then more explosions happened. And so you went back into the truck to get some equipment, right? Our radio and stuff.
I did. I went back to snag the radio and, yeah, my backpack, my 3-day ruck, and your shotgun was still in there. I couldn't get that shotgun out, though. It was, like, jammed.
Yeah.
It was, like, all bent, jammed in the vehicle.
Well, if it's bent, you probably don't need it anyway.
No. yeah, there was a lot more than just small arms fire, so... Back then, remember the insurgents shot in direct fire, and
yeah,
the pickups with just PVC tubing and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
And they'd adjust the pickup by driving it forward or backwards to
right
adjust where the shot would land.
Yeah, it was a pretty coordinated ambush, honestly, because I remember, and
yeah,
then the secondary IED went off. Shane Ward was running with his aid bag to help us, and he got hit. And you covered me with your own body and took shrapnel because of that secondary IED. And so that's how you got your Purple Heart.
Well, yeah, I started pulling you to cover, and there was nowhere to take you because it was open on, the, like, what, 1,000 meters on each side of the road besides the asphalt cup,
yeah,
factory?
Yeah.
Until Chris Kent started bringing his vehicle around, setting up a perimeter. So I just dragged us back to our burning vehicle.
Yeah, that's all you could do.
That's all we had for cover. But I was so scared when that was going down. And all I knew was, like, try to get you and I to safety.
Yeah.
That was, like, my first thought. But it wasn't just like the enemy shooting at us in indirect motor rounds. Like all of our ammunition in the back of the truck was cooking off.
Right.
With Eric in the back.
Yeah.
And we had white phosphorus 203 rounds back there too.
Yeah. Did you see
that? So I was like.
Yeah. It was dangerous. Did you see the photo of the truck the next day?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, how does anybody live through that? That is crazy.
Well. Oh man, I think, and then Shane came over and my heart sank.
I remember they loaded us on that. Well, first the helicopters wouldn't land, and Lieutenant Kent says, if you don't land, we're going to shoot you down. And
yeah.
They finally landed and they loaded us up in the helicopters. And I remember taking off and watching you guys, and just, I was in so much pain. I'd never felt that much pain before.
Oh man.
And so I was so much pain, I just tried to count to 10. I was like, whatever I can do just to, and then I'd get to three and start over, you know, and it's like, all right. And it was really hard seeing you guys just kind of fade away, and I didn't get to see you guys again after that.
That was really tough.
Yeah. Well, I had convinced you and myself that I was bulletproof. All you guys, because we were doing, we were, because right before we left, we won the squad of the battalion. They pinned awards on our chest that morning, right before we left, and so we got there. So they had us doing all the craziest stuff, all the most dangerous stuff, because we were the best. So, and I had really thought these guys believed that I was bulletproof, but ended up I was not. But there were some fun times over there, too. I want to definitely talk about Eric, and he was definitely a leadership challenge.
I personally want to say thank you to both of you for being so vulnerable on this this episode today. And it's great to hear your stories, and in so many ways I can relate because of my own experiences in the military. And, you know, you talk about, you know, feeling like you're indestructible. And I had that feeling my first tour. I'd only been to Fort Polk for 2 weeks, and then we deployed to Iraq.
Oh, wow.
And we were doing route clearance, and we were taking some guys from the 82nd out to this chicken farm where these guys have been dealing rockets and ammunition and everything. And so we went and dropped them off for an OP. And like you said, listening to your intuition, we were going through the town of Diwania in the traffic circle. And I had a weird feeling. And I even told my gunner, I said, "Jeff, something doesn't feel right."
Yeah.
And we made our way through, and sure enough, coming back, we were the lead scout truck. I was the lead scout truck driver at the time. And sure enough, that spot, boom, IED goes off. Mm-hmm. And didn't do any damage to our trucks. It went off. It was delayed. And so it went off in between our truck and the lieutenant's truck. And at that time, that was our first big contact of our tour.
Yeah.
And we were pumped. We were on the radios right after, man, like Superman, you know, we were just so pumped.
Yeah.
And an hour later, I got hit by an EFP. It was seven-inch plates buried in a culvert, and I was the only one to walk out of that truck. Mm. So you talking about the taste of the metal, the smells, and just everything, I can recall all that myself, too. And so, you know, it's really great. It's saddening, but the fact that you guys are open to sharing your experiences, and it's also helping me to think back to what happened with my own personal experiences. It's great to keep these stories, you know, documented, and maybe they could help others in any way.
Well, so. I like that. Let's go off of that. But first, if you're just joining us, this is Rogue Cell Radio. We're a radio show with combat veterans talking about combat veteran stuff. But we don't only talk about war stories. We talk about the community, and we talk about, you know, how we can help the community, getting veterans involved in the community. But we're talking about trying to get stories down. And so Rogue Cell is more than a radio show. It's also a nonprofit. We officially got our nonprofit designation through the IRS. And right now, we did get a grant through America 250 to interview veterans. And we are looking on video and audio. And we're looking for veterans, World War II veterans. We're looking for Korean War veterans. We're looking for Cold War veterans. I don't think their voices have really been heard too much either. And of course, Iraq War and Afghanistan War and Hurricane Katrina and anywhere else. And what we're going to do with those is cut them down to about 5 to 7 minutes, put it on our social media, and also send a copy of them to the Library of Congress for posterity, which is important.
Absolutely. And I want to add to that, what we've discussed is we want to get veteran stories, but if there's a veteran in your family, if it's a spouse, a brother, a sister, an aunt, an uncle, if it's a deceased family member, but you still recall their story and you want to share it, let's get together. Reach out to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Matt Zedwick is also on the board of Rogue Cell. So
that's right, yeah.
So, how many different hats? You also, you and your wife run the Lower Columbia Veterinarian Clinic, right?
Well, just Columbia Veterinary Hospital.
Oh, yes. Columbia Veterinary Hospital. I always put lower in there. I don't know. Sorry. Don't want to give the wrong directions somewhere else. Yeah, but you guys do such amazing work in the community, and everybody seems to know you here, so I think that's an amazing thing.
I would say people know them all across the country.
Yeah.
You go in to get an appointment at the vet, you got people flying in from San Francisco just to come to your vet.
Yeah, we do. We've had clients from San Francisco, a lot from Seattle, Portland, Vancouver. We are the most affordable veterinary clinic in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, not only are you the most affordable, but you also have a daycare for your employees and their children.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot of people do that.
I don't know of any other business that does, to be honest.
I think that's amazing. And you have your four kids. I was just coloring with them last night at the Silver Salmon.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
They helped me with my Rogue Cell mural thing that I was doing. That was great. And you say I had to take off because Jackie was sick, but you said we got up on the wall. That was awesome.
Well, we had to put them up on the wall whether they're finished or not. And they just hung yours by mine. I didn't even know how I finished it because I was watching four kids that night. And that was a task in itself. Fun, but yeah. A task.
All right. So if you guys are out there and you're a veteran or family member, we never exclude family members. I wanted to tell you a little bit about the other stuff that we're doing. We do have community coffee every single Thursday at the Elks Lodge here in Astoria on the second floor. Peg runs that. She's been running it for a long time. And that's a great thing. We also meet on Saturdays for dog walking. We meet at Pier 12 at 10 o'clock and we walk dogs along the riverfront. It sounds a little like, oh, you guys are old. But, you know, it's pretty cool. I like it. And you got Bandit, new dog. We're going to talk about Bandit and then what happened. Oh, no, with your pup while you're in Egypt.
Oh, it was awful. So I had the opportunity to travel internationally and went to Egypt and Jordan over Christmas with my mom. And what a grand experience. But the worst part of the whole trip was I'd lost my dog. I had a Siberian Husky. I'd had him since he was just weeks old. And he was 13, excellent shape, really healthy. And he aspirated on his dog food in the kennel. And so really sad, totally unexpected. But I have great friends right here in this studio room with me. Sean, you were really great in helping find out what was going on, and then you reached out to Zedwick, and you guys helped me out when I was, you know, half world away, and so I can't thank you both enough. Looking at positives, I decided to get a dog right away, and so I went out to Clatsop Animal Assistance, and I knew what I wanted. I already had my eyes set on a couple of dogs there, and so I went out, met with him several weeks, and ended up bringing Bandit home. And Bandit is a...
I like that name.
Bandit's a member of Columbia Vet now, so yeah. He's being seen by the vets over there.
He's such a good dog. He is such a good dog.
Yeah.
I love Bandit.
He's great. But he's got lots to learn, too, so...
So, Z, we're talking about everything, but I wanted to know a little bit, like, after, so I left the military in 2007, because I did 6 years the day after 9/11. What was your career like after that?
Oh, man.
After we got back from Iraq. You had more deployments over there, didn't you?
No.
Good.
I did not.
Good.
That was my last one. So when I got home, it was so crazy when we got home. First of all, I don't know why they let us drive or even let me have a license for like the first 6 months. I was so aggressive. It was stupid, especially with like a brand new truck. And
yeah.
Well, I didn't buy a brand new truck. I wasn't like everyone else. I bought a used one, but brand new to me. I still wanted to save some money. But I went to Lynn Benton Community College because you'd been doing some artwork in Iraq with me. So I still have like some art journals and stuff that you and I drew together.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because Sean was giving me Sean Davis, not Sean Johnson. Sean was giving me some art lessons. I have this one character that you're showing me how to like draw action.
Oh, right.
You know, because I was like so 2D. You're like, wait, try this. Yeah. And you're giving me some tips. But then Lewis Franklin, he was a graphic design instructor at Lynn Benton Community College. So I joined that program when I got back. And I did that for a little while.
And Lewis was, he was in Iraq with us as well.
Yeah, Yeah, he was in 1st Platoon.
Yeah.
And so my focus was college and getting an education. And then after that, I needed more money. So I went and did masonry with my dad in Bend, Oregon. Took about, I don't know, maybe six, 8 month break from school and worked to earn some money. And then went back and met Kristen. But I was probably like, 2.5 years in. We had this next deployment to Iraq coming up. Completely different mission than what we had from our first one, because it was more like a guard duty type thing. Base security mission, right? So I spoke to the battalion commander, and I was about, my ETS was coming up. I was like, hey, sir, look, I'm like 2.5 years in this program. I want to finish. I see myself as a lifer. Like, and so I don't want to go on this next deployment. This is my ETS date. I'm actually looking at ROTC.
Yeah.
I need like, you know, because you have to have a time from your ETS to actually have the ROTC contract. And so he okayed it. I signed up and ended up becoming an officer, and I commissioned as a military intelligence officer, like Ron Clement, because I felt like I was getting too beat up.
And you were a company commander?
I was. So I was had two commands. I was HHC company commander for 741 BEB at Camp Withycombe in Portland, and then I was also the military intelligence commander for Bravo Company, 741 BEB, or Delta Company, and that was at PDX.
And did you do your full 20?
I did 20 years and 8 months.
That's it. So you were a lifer. And now, you know, but I don't, we're have to close off pretty soon. But what I want to say is that so many veterans who go through the stuff that we've gone through really let that moment define who they are for the rest of their lives. Mm. And I say, if your life is a book, you shouldn't be defined by just one chapter. Mm-mm. You really should, you know, try to be a positive force in your community. And that's what Rogue Cell is really all about. So we're going to try. But we're getting to the end. Matt, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Pleasure. I love you guys.
Yeah, I love you too, buddy. And again, if you guys know anybody who, you a family member, or if you're a veteran who wants to be interviewed by Rogue Cell, reach out to Sean at roguecell.org, S-E-A-N at roguecell.org. You can meet us every Thursday at the Elks Lodge for coffee, 9 till 11, or come to dog walking with us. And thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it.